And welcome to Out of the Box. This is Joan Conroe, your host today, filling in for Jimmy Trujillo. And my guest in the studio is Justin Kohler, our county prosecutor. Let me make sure I've got your mic all ready.
Good afternoon.
Thank you for being here, Justin. I appreciate it.
Thanks. I always enjoy coming up and hanging out in the studio.
Oh, good. And I want to give extra thanks to Faith Harding, the volunteer coordinator extraordinaire here at KKCR, for handling the phones and giving me moral backup, because it's been a little while since I've done a radio show. Our topic today is going to be vacation rentals, and in particular, vacation rentals that seem to have gotten their certificates in perhaps an illegal or inappropriate way. And to just give a little bit of background information, the state legislature mandated the counties create visitor destination areas where their resort uses would go. And over time, some of that started to spill out into places like Hyena and Wainiha and Hanalei, places that were supposed to be residential, in part because, as we all know, there's one road in and one road out, and it's a flood area. And so over time, some of those vacation rentals started to proliferate. And so the county council, in an attempt to get it under some kind of control, created first a law in 2008, and then that law was amended in 2010, at which time they added properties in the agricultural district. And so currently we have about 500 vacation rentals on Kauai. Two-thirds of those are on the North Shore. And about 110 of the vacation rentals are in Wainiha alone. And I think if everyone knows that area, they realize it's a small community, and so that's a fairly substantial impact. So this first came to my, you know, I've been interested in following the vacation rental issue for many years. But recently when that man died, when he jumped off a dock, at a vacation rental on the Wainiha River, and drowned, I looked up into the county building department, and I did not find any permits for that dock or that deck. And that started me digging around more and more and more into some of these vacation rentals. And so far, after looking at just 12 properties in the area between what used to be Charo's, the Hanalei Colony Resort, and up around Makua or Tunnels, looked at 12 properties, and every one of those had some sort of an irregularity in how they got their certificates. Some of them did not require or submit all of the required tax documentation or records of reservations that were required, because you had to show that you had been using it as a vacation rental prior to 2008 in order to get a certificate. So there were documentations that were supposed to be done and to show that you had prior use, and some of these people did not do it. Other people had enlarged and remodeled their homes well beyond what had been allowed under their building permits. Others had enclosed their downstairs in the flood zone, having 1 to 3 bedrooms and kitchens in the downstairs area, so there were people sleeping in the flood zone in violation of federal law. And there were other people who were given their certificates even though they had zoning violations, such as an enclosed downstairs. And some people had also missed the deadline for applying, and so there were a number of things that started coming up. So I have been chronicling these in my blog, Kauai Eclectic, and I've titled it The Abuse Chronicles. And so as I started writing these, people were getting concerned. And one of the people who was concerned is Justin Kohler. And so let me bring Justin into the conversation here and talk a little bit about, you know, why did this sort of raise your eyebrows?
Well, as you know, and as some of the listeners might know, I've been the prosecutor since December. So it's been about 4 months now, and you know, we've got our team put together, and you know, we've been able to finally sit down and kind of start looking at, you know, what are the needs we're servicing, what are the needs that are still out there, what are the things that we can, you know, where are the areas we need to do more enforcement. And you know, I haven't spent a lot of time in Haena or Wainiha around the area where these rentals are proliferating. So, you know, when I started to see you know, the attention you were bringing and the attention some other rather committed members of the community have been trying to bring to focus on this issue, you know, it was a real eye-opener, and I think it was for a lot of other folks, too, to see, you know, the way that some people out there are really dramatically exploiting the system that we've got here that's been put in place, you know, in 2008 and 2010 to try to rein in this situation we have on the island. So looking at that and being aware of the provisions in our zoning code that do provide for criminal sanctions, it became apparent to me that, you know, something needed to be done. Something wasn't working right in the system. Something isn't working right in the system. And so, you know, for me, then I look at, well, what resources can I put into addressing this problem? And in the process of, you know, looking at this over the last couple months, you know, we've had conversations with the planning department, our conversations with the council, conversations with the administration. And, you know, what I would like to do is start doing some enforcement in these areas, or looking at what we can do. These cases, it's kind of going to be a little bit of uncharted waters because, you know, as you pointed out, nobody's really ever done it before here on Kauai and not really anywhere else either. So, but it's, I think it's a trip into those waters that we need to take. And, you know, when we've got people sleeping in a flood zone that probably don't know they're in a flood zone because, you know, if they go online, they see an ad, the place looks great, they send their check, they come. They don't understand that, you know, on this island, we've had people die, you know, because of water coming into where they're sleeping. I mean, it can be a dangerous situation, and I don't want to see people die. So for me, it's not so much a political question. It's not a question of I want to shut down every vacation rental on the island or I want to put people in jail, but I don't want people to die. And if I've got resources I can put towards that goal, I'm going to do it. So that's basically why I'm here.
Thank you for that, Justin. And I did want to let our listeners know that Mike DeHelig, the planning director, is going to be calling in at about 4:30 because there's sort of a two-pronged approach to this. One is the planning department is responsible for issuing these non-conforming use certificates for vacation rentals. And the building department obviously is responsible for issuing building permits. And then we have Justin's office, the Office of the Prosecuting Attorney, which takes a criminal as opposed to a civil approach. And so the planning department goes after civil fines or bringing a property into compliance or various ways of dealing with this. But Justin, tell us a little bit about what is different about what your office can do in regards to a criminal investigation and prosecution as opposed to civil.
Well, you're exactly right. There are a couple of different pieces to this puzzle here, and they all have different roles to play. My agency, we prosecute criminal offenses within the county of Kauai. Our authority arises out of the Attorney General delegated to the counties to conduct law enforcement in the counties. So our kuleana is to look into violations of the criminal law, violations of state law that happen within the territory of this county, including Kauai and Niihau. So that's our piece of it. The planning department, like you mentioned, they've got the piece of being the administrative arm of the county government that is charged with administering this TVR program. So within their discretion, as it's conferred on them by their enabling act, they go out and, like you said, issue these permits or don't issue these permits based on whatever criteria are in place at the time. And then sort of on the administration side, you've also got the civil enforcement piece. And that's a very important piece because, you know, historically, you know, the purpose of zoning enforcement is not to be punitive, but to achieve compliance. You know, the theory is, oh, somebody, you know, they put a shed in their yard, they don't have the right permits for it. We're not looking to put you in jail, but go get the permit, come into compliance, you know, done. But, you know, if you don't have that hammer of criminal enforcement out there, I think what you start to see is that things start to get out of balance. And, you know, what we're seeing, certainly in areas like Haena and Wai Niha, is that balance is way, way out of whack, because you've got people that are taking advantage of the system. They're clearly, you know, flouting, you know, flagrantly not in compliance with what they're supposed to be doing. The documentation, it, you know, appears to be specious or suspect in some of these cases. And, you know, at that point, if the civil enforcement arm isn't working, or if people refuse to come into compliance because, you know, some of these people have a ton of money and they're not afraid of paying a fine here and there, you've got to have something more out there. And, you know, it's unfortunate because you don't want to have to spend a lot of taxpayer dollars, you know, putting people in jail over zoning violations. Like, it just seems like it just seems like it shouldn't have to get to that point, but here we are. So we've got to start looking at what we can do from an enforcement perspective and hopefully bring that situation back into balance.
So maybe the civil side is a little bit more of the carrot, whereas the criminal side is a little bit more of the stick.
Yeah, I think that's an accurate way to look at it. You know, the planning department, and you know, nothing I say is intended to slight anything that they're doing, and they've got a real uphill battle on their hands in terms of, you know, coming into this situation. I mean, Mike came in a few years ago, and you know, we've already got five, however many hundred of these things out there on the island, and you know, to rein that situation in is going to take a tremendous, you know, it's like turning around a big ship in a little bathtub. So I respect the work that they're doing on their side. But, you know, they've got a limited array of options available to them, and we're hoping to add to that toolbox. And not really add to it, but just kind of use the tools that are already there to help people understand that these laws are there for a reason. They need to be followed. It is a public safety question, and it's a matter of life and death in some situations. So we take that very seriously.
So again, this is Joan Conroe on Out of the Box, and we're speaking with Justin Kohler at the moment. The topic is vacation rentals. If you have a question or a comment, the number is 826-7771. And so, Justin, what are some of the things that, I mean, in terms of penalties or, you know, crime, you know, what sort of charges could be brought against people, perhaps? I mean, I know you haven't really investigated them, but sort of just from what you've seen, I mean, what are sort of the charges and what kind of penalties might be associated with that?
Well, there are provisions in our zoning code that do make violations misdemeanor-level offenses, which, you know, a misdemeanor is not a felony, but it is a meaningful sanction, I think, for most folks. Most folks go through their lives and don't get convicted of misdemeanors. But, you know, it's something people can and do go to jail for. You can spend up to a year in jail for a violation of a misdemeanor. If it's something that's really egregious, you know, you can and will go to jail for it. And there are provisions to pay fines associated with that as well. There are some other theories that are out there as far as an enforcement standpoint goes. I mean, you start looking at some kind of fraud charges or other, you know, fraudulent representations made to government agencies, and you start looking at other misdemeanors and possibly some low-level felonies. And then, you know, those are your more serious sanctions. You know, it's hard to say what a particular, you know, property would fall into without really digging into the files and looking at the paperwork and looking at the permits and looking at the zoning code, because the legislation is does have a kind of a tortured history as far as its evolution. So you got to make sure that you really line all those things up. And, you know, my perspective is that looking into these cases, even from a criminal law standpoint, is going to be kind of like taking on a civil case. I think there's going to be a lot of paper involved. Because there's a lot of money at stake when it comes to these permits, you're going to face some pretty fierce resistance, I think, from some of the landowners or some of the permit holders. So you've really got to make sure, you know, we've got our ducks in a row before we go walking into court. It's not going to be a situation where we can just come out next week and issue a raft of indictments or start, you know, serving summonses. It's going to take some time, but it's a process we need to get rolling. Because I think it's just, you know, it'll benefit the entire community.
When you mentioned that there's a lot of money at stake in looking at some of these properties and the history of their sales, and seeing that some of them have increased, their sales value has increased $1 million to, you know, in one case it was like almost $8 million after they had these vacation rental certificates in hand, because essentially once they get these certificates, they pretty much have them for life until, you know, it's revoked in some way, which has not happened yet. And so it becomes a very, very valuable thing to have, and because some of these places are going for as much as $15,000 a week. And so even if a person's paying a couple $1 million for the property, you know, within a relatively short amount of time, you can completely pay it off. And which is why some of these properties have been bought not by individuals, but by actual investment consortiums. Some of them, not even, they're foreign investment consortiums. Some of them are groups of attorneys, et cetera. And so they're owned as a commercial investment. And so how can you go after something that has a corporate structure like that instead of just owned by, you know, John Doe?
Well, there are provisions in our penal code and in our rules that do allow us to pursue criminal prosecution of corporate entities, or basically entities that aren't, you know, human beings. So there are ways to go about doing that. Obviously, you can't throw a company in jail, but you can throw an agent of a company in jail if the facts and the law support that. There are ways to go about doing this. It has been done. I think, you know, you've given coverage in the past to, you know, a case involving Goodfellow Brothers and some rocks down in Kaloa. You know, that was a case involving a criminal prosecution of a corporate entity that, you know, did yield some positive results. So it can be done. It just takes a little bit of will, and it takes a little bit of precision in how you go about doing it. And yeah, it's definitely going to be, with regards to some of these cases, it's going to be a complicated thing. There's absolutely no doubt about it, but I believe it's worth doing. I think it's something the community supports and would benefit from. So there are ways to do it.
Okay, that's good to hear. So we have a caller, and
Hello.
Go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Thank you so much. What should it be now? It should have been 20 years ago. And if the penalty was big enough, we would not have that problem.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying that it's just been going on for a long time, and that's why it's gotten so big?
I mean, 37 years, it was already starting. Mm-hmm. Why didn't they do something about it then?
Well, that's a good question. I think for Justin, he just got elected, so he couldn't.
I voted.
Good. So, but that is a good question.
Why do we say we have to start now? Why wasn't it before?
Well,
3 years ago, when everybody bought for what, 500,000, and then 2 years later they sold it for 1 million, and then it went on and on and on. They did not know what was happening.
Yeah, and just to jump in real quick, caller, and thank you for the call. You make a really good point, and I think the only answer I would have to that is that the best time to start this enforcement would have been about, you know, 20 years ago. The second best time is going to be now. I mean, that's all we've got to work with. So,
but you know, the other prosecutor told us the same. He said we're going to start, and everyone, and we vote, thinking they're going to be changed. And I hope you do it. I really do, and give the penalty very, very high, because those people have deep pockets. They have millions of dollars.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. There's a lot of money at stake. People are going to fight pretty fiercely to protect these permits.
Because they got away with it too long. So now they say, oh, why now? Why now? Because it's time, and I really hope that you keep your word. And I know you will.
Thank you for your confidence.
I vote, and I am a strong voter, and I believe in the people that I vote for.
That's,
okay, thank you so much.
We need more people like you. Thank you.
Thank you for calling. Aloha.
Aloha.
Thank you.
I think the caller does bring up a good point, you know, that this has been going on for quite a while. I mean, like I said, the law was just passed in 2008 and 2010, but it was already a problem before that. And in since then, it has just continued to compound. And so it raises the issue, Justin, of, you know, once you're sort of in so deep, do these people have such vested rights that it's difficult to pry them out, even if they've done something wrong?
Well, you know, we we discussed this a little bit the other day, but, you know, I have the luxury of, in my office, of not having to think so much about what is a vested right and what is not a vested right and when did these rights accrue and things like that. Because, you know, if we uncover evidence of fraud or evidence that, you know, a federal flood law isn't being complied with and it's something that's been applied to the counties by incorporation in our zoning code or something like that, then, you know, it's much more black and white of an issue for us. You know, I spent, you know, a lot of my career working for our county attorney's office, working for Corporation Council and other towns and cities. And it gets a lot hairier on that side of things, on the civil side of things, to look at, okay, you're going to try to take somebody's permit away, and how do you go about doing that? From our perspective, it's a little bit different. We look at the law. We say, this is what the law is. You're not in compliance with the law. We think it's, you know, we have probable cause. We can prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. And that's really where the analysis ends. You know, different defenses have come up along the way, but we have the luxury of kind of coming at things from a little bit more of a straightforward approach that I think helps us a little bit.
All right. And so we have another caller. And go ahead, caller. You're on the air. All right. Go ahead.
Hello.
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 Hello. Hello. You're on the air.
If I'm on the air, that matters.
Yeah, but you're on the air. We're hearing you.
Cool. All I'm saying is, well, you know what, Mr. Attorney General, why voted for you, and how are you going to change stuff?
First, he's not I just have to clarify, he's not actually the Attorney General. He's our deputy. He's our prosecuting attorney. And so,
okay, I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
Anyways, he's an elected official.
Yeah, he is. And that's, so we've asked him how he is going to change things. And so one thing he did say is that he is going to move into, looking into enforcement against some of these in terms of a criminal enforcement.
Sure. And what I want to do, the biggest thing I want to do is I want to hire a deputy prosecutor to start looking at these cases. And in next year's...
The first thing I don't want to listen to is blowing smoke.
Oh.
I want you to... Okay.
Sure.
I'm a citizen.
And I understand that. And the problem is that, you know, being in a county agency, we've got a certain number of resources available to us.
Of course.
Our agency, we prosecute murders, property crimes, crimes against persons, sexual assaults, domestic violence cases, drunk driving, drug cases.
Well, you know what,
everything
Justin,
from
that,
A to Z.
That's,
so
that's a great statement.
Hang on one second. You know, hang on
course,
one second.
We need to do that. Excuse me, sir. I voted for you, so you need to listen.
Nope, go
to
ahead.
Me.
Go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyways, my simple point is, yeah, need to prosecute all that stuff, but I'm hoping that you have enough insight to help us get rid of other things. And I'm going to say that without saying another word.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for your call. And we have another call waiting. And so we'll have
I'm all ears.
Okay.
Thank you. Thanks for calling
okay.
in.
Okay. Thank you. Aloha.
Bye.
All right. And go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
All right. Who's on the line? I didn't get to.
Okay.
All
right. So we have the county prosecuting attorney, Justin Kohler, is on the line. He's actually here in the studio.
Okay, Mr. Kohler, I've been trying to get a time to set up with you. My name is Kekani Paul.
Yes, I've seen your messages coming in, and I asked my secretary to set up a meeting with you, yes.
Yes, I know you're very busy also, and I'm looking very much to sit down with you because I'm hearing you discuss the matters of a company and a state, which is an administration, correct?
Sure.
They administer the laws of the United States Constitution and the United States Congress, correct?
That's basically true.
Basically, fact-finding. So when officials take an oath to uphold the United States Constitution and the U.S. laws, are they limited to what laws they can and cannot use?
Well,
when you take an oath to uphold the United States law, you uphold every single law that was passed by Congress.
Well, our jurisdiction is to enforce criminal laws under the state of Hawaii and the county of Kauai. So we don't enforce criminal federal laws here through my office. What we prosecute would be offenses under state law, so the state of Hawaii, and also the county of Kauai's charter. So federal criminal prosecution is something that comes under the U.S. Attorney's Office. They're both,
I understand that.
Yeah.
My question is, do you guys have an obligation to comply with just state law and county law and not comply with federal law? Or do you have an obligation to comply with federal, state, and county law?
Our obligation is in what we do is to comply with the law and to enforce state and county laws. So that's what we enforce.
Okay, I have to interrupt here, Connie. I have a guest who is scheduled to come on at 4:30. He's on the air waiting. So would you mind calling back after 5 o'clock, and then you can talk with Justin a little bit more.
Just one quick question.
Okay.
That needs to be addressed, and I'll let go.
Okay.
Federal law. Are you guys obligated to comply with federal law? Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay, so as an official capacity representing the county jurisdiction, you have to fulfill the obligations respecting federal law and not just state and county laws. Meaningly, there's laws that's passed pertaining to Hawaii and its jurisdictions. That's the reason why I'm asking this question with respect. And it pertains to land issue, it pertains to human rights issues, it pertains to civil rights issues. Now, if the administration is not complying with federal law, will they be responsible for federal criminals violating federal laws because they chose not to uphold the federal law?
That's possible, but my office does not prosecute violations of federal law. So I hope that answers your question,
sir. My question is, you stated you have to comply with federal law. I understand the county and state. They don't prosecute under the federal jurisdiction.
Correct.
But you have an obligation to respect federal law if you took an oath to uphold the U.S. Constitution.
Yes.
And so my question is, if you agree on taking an oath to uphold federal law, then the situation that leads today in Hawaii with the Hawaiian people, there is a report that was due in 1993 from the United States of America that made its report to the United Nations where it admitted in the law. And you can revisit the 110 and 111 session in Congress that the Native Hawaiians are not federally recognized.
Okay, Connie.
Meaning me.
Connie, I have to... This would be a subject for another show, I think, because I've got somebody waiting to, but I appreciate you calling in.
Yeah, okay. And I look forward to meeting with you, Connie, so I thank you for calling in as well.
Okay, go see Justin at his office. Okay, aloha. Okay, so we have Planning Director Mike DeHelig is on the phone. And so, let's see, are you there, Mike?
How you doing, Joan?
I'm good.
Hi, Mike.
Thank you very much. And first, I want to tell everybody you're listening to KKCR. We're talking about vacation rentals. We have County Prosecutor Justin Kohler in the studio, and we have Planning Director Mike DeHelig on the phone. And so, Mike, you have, I'm sure, I know you've been reading my blogs, and we've been talking about some of this problem that's been happening with these vacation rentals that have some irregularities in their permitting process. So talk to me a little. I know you inherited this problem because you came in and took over the planning department after a lot of this stuff was already underway. So talk to me a little bit, please, and tell us a little bit about what you're doing to kind of get a handle on this.
Okay, and just to give everybody some background in terms of where my jurisdiction is, and as Justin, I was listening earlier, mentioned, my department is responsible for the approval of any transit vacation rentals outside of the visitor destination areas, which, under law, you can't have anymore. and also the enforcement of them. And, you know, when I look back at the files and how this all started back when the law first passed, which was Ordinance 864, there was inspections that had started regarding these visitor, these transit vacation rentals that are outside the visitor destination area. And then the law was changed again, and what that law did was it required inspections to be done in a very short amount of time. And, you know, Joan, I know that you had mentioned earlier about the recent case of that gentleman falling off the unapproved deck. And so, you know, when I looked at what was happening in context of some of your blogs and what was going on in our files, I said, okay, well, here's what happened at the time 864 was passed. Here was the time that 876 was passed, and then here's what happened at when 904 was passed. And when we looked through our files, we realized, you know, there are things that needed to be adjusted in order to have our systems talk to each other. And I know that there's been a lot of concern about compliance with the flood ordinance, as well as just compliance with our CZO in general. And what we've done, and I know some of the people that are listening to your program may have noticed, is that we have actually taken the TVR log and put it on maintenance. And the reason why we've put it on maintenance at this point is because we are actually trying to normalize all of our files and then create a unified system. Let me give you, you know, a scenario that, and Joan, I mentioned this to you earlier when I ran into you the other day.
Mm-hmm.
We have files that are labeled TV with a number and then NC as a suffix. And then you have files that are labeled TVNC and a number. And then you have files that are labeled TV and then have a number. And so when we look at trying to be able to data mine and enforce and catalog our efforts and our files, we have three different numbering systems for what is essentially the same thing. And those are the kinds of things that, you know, when you get back to a back-to-basics type of thing, we need to correct. And what my staff is doing right now is we're actually going through every file and we're actually chronologically organizing every piece of paperwork that we've been able to find, and we're renumbering the system just so that everything is unified under one system. And the reason why this is important for us as planners is because when we are able to input this information into a GIS database or an Access database, we're able to provide accurate statistics. And statistics are really what the public is concerned about. How many TVRs are in a certain district? How many TVRs are in an area? How many violations do we have? And we can't do that given our, you know, on our current system. Our current system is inputted using a web interface that, from a search standpoint, we really can't provide the kind of products and information that people are yearning to receive in terms of information. And I certainly understand when you look at a community like Haena and Wainiha, we've been able to color in on maps and look at, you know, what areas have been affected by TVRs. And if we use the color red, a majority of Haena and Wainiha, they're colored red. And so mm-hmm. I certainly understand why this is on the forefront of everybody's mind. And so we're essentially, and that's the mantra, Joan, that I'm trying to instill with my staff, is let's get back to basics here. Let's organize in a unified manner. Let's input information in a unified manner. Let's file paperwork in chronological order. And so that way, at least we have a foundation and a base to begin to start building accuracy in enforcement and renewal so that we're able to have then our system talk to other departments. The flood ordinance is actually governed and, I guess, enforced by the Department of Public Works, so that's not necessarily our jurisdiction. But where we can come in and help out is we can withhold renewals from going through if there are flood violations. And the person that makes the determination on a flood violation is from a different department. So we need our systems to talk to each other. And if we don't have that foundation, then we're spinning our wheels. And so after realizing that there are some of these systematic issues that we need to address, I found it prudent that we said, okay, let's start from square one and let's reorganize and let's get a system that works for us.
When you mentioned that the systems need to, you know, your system needs to be able to talk to other people in other departments, is there communication between the other departments? Because when I was doing some of this investigation, it seemed like, you know, planning would be doing one thing and building would be doing another and real property would be doing something else. And there really wasn't a lot of, it didn't seem to me, coordination. And so you would have something like building would issue a permit, but then it might be 2 or 3 years before real property actually went out and assessed it at a higher value. And then meantime, maybe building had given this permit, but planning was not wanting to give had concerns about it. And so is it more than just having a system that can talk to one another? I mean, does there need to be greater communication among the professionals that are working there at the county?
You know, I think it's both, Joan, and quite frankly, when you look at what we've been doing in the past, we could be doing better in communication. The mayor's been pushing all the departments that are related with the building permit process to come online as part of the E-plan review process, and I know that it's something that has been in the news quite frequently as of late because we're actually going online. And the difference there with the E-plan review system versus what we have right now, which is phone calls, emails, and passing along plans, is that everybody sees the same thing in real time, in digital format. And so there can be no mistake as to what people are seeing on 6 computer terminals because you see changes as they are going on in real time. And what we found in our serial review process, which is essentially, Joan, you take one set of plans from the planning department, and then you go to the water department and get it stamped, and then you take the plans again and go to the fire department and get it stamped, is that sometimes the plans change. They change as it goes through the planning process. And what we see, because we're the first department to stamp off on plans, is maybe not what the plans are at the very end when they're actually filed at the building division. And so where the communication element is hopefully improved is that we see everything in real time. All the agencies are viewing the same thing at the same time, and we can start to, you know, issue spot things on plans and say, hey, we got a problem here, and alert the other departments that, you know, we can't sign off on these plans until this is remediated. And I think that kind of communication and cooperation will hopefully be able to catch a lot of these issues, particularly as your blogs have raised with respect to enforcement of the flood ordinance. And the flood ordinance is in particular of importance to us because we need to maintain compliance with the federal flood insurance program so that everybody on the island can have flood insurance. And if we don't enforce it and implement it correctly, then we get in trouble with the feds. So it's serious stuff. It's serious stuff that we need to communicate, and hopefully with something like the e-plan review process, we're able to take care of some of these gaps in communication.
All right. I want to let our listeners know we're speaking with Mike DeHelig, the County Planning Director, and the topic is vacation rentals. And so, Mike, let's talk a little bit about the FEMA flood, because the county... It's my understanding that the county was under an investigation because of some of these concerns about these vacation rentals that had downstairs units that were being used. And it was my understanding that some of these were not going to be renewed, but they were. So can you tell us a little bit about what's happening with that FEMA review regarding some of these flood violations?
Yeah, so, you know, a couple of years ago, and again, the Department of Public Works is responsible for flood review. My department is responsible for TVR renewal and enforcement. And what we found as the FEMA audit was being conducted a couple of years ago on a number of properties that were located on the North Shore was that the FEMA agents, as well as the state, which also has an oversight authority with the flood ordinance, had desired to have the county work together between departments and actually uniformly applied across permits. And so, for instance, like you mentioned, something that is within planning's jurisdiction should be essentially withheld in a circumstance where the flood ordinance is being violated. Now, part of the concern and part of the change that was done in the last ordinance, which is Ordinance 904, Ordinance 904 actually now allows for withholding of renewals in circumstances where there are violations of land use law, and we interpret any violations of the flood ordinance as part of land use law. And so when we need to figure out, and it's something that we've been discussing with the Public Works Department on how to better communicate with each other, on when there's a circumstance that, a certificate renewal needs to be withheld. The way that the legislation is written, I can't make a call whether or not there is a violation or not. That call has to come from the county engineer's shop. But when they make that call, then I can come in and say, okay, now there's a problem here. And so, again, it's an issue of systems, and sometimes the systems don't work. And what is required of us as county officials is to look back on it and say, okay, this didn't happen. How do we fix it? And those are the discussions that we're having on right now.
Okay, and I have there's one caller who I believe has a question for you, but before we go to that person, there was another person who wanted to know, if a person wants to have a vacation rental on Hawaiian homelands in Anahola, do they still have to comply with the county's vacation rental laws?
The answer to that is actually no. The state attorney general has made an opinion, and this has been a longstanding opinion that has gone back decades, that with respect to zoning laws, any lands within the jurisdiction of the Department of Hawaiian Homelands, the county does not have any zoning jurisdiction over. And so even though we do a process within the county, the building division does, with respect to health, safety, these types of reviews to ensure the structural integrity of these structures, we, from a jurisdiction standpoint, at the planning department, do not have any urban form or use determination jurisdiction over those properties on Hawaiian homelands. So for that particular individual, I would suggest that they probably refer the question over to the Hawaiian Homelands office, and they can probably give them a clarity there.
All right, so we're going to try to bring in that other caller here, and so hang on, Mike, and if anything happens, please call back.
Sure.
And so, okay, we're going to bring that other caller in. Okay, caller, are you there?
I'm standing by.
Okay, can you hear? All right. Do you have a question?
I can now. Anyway, my simple response is, we did shock. Stop high-rise on Kauai. And this was back in the late 70s. It was the first example of initiative and referendum in the whole country. And we stopped the 8 stories being built at Mile High. Now, why can't we just get together and do the same stuff? And then we stopped with initiative and referendum. We stopped Holoholo campers.
Okay.
That's pretty much all I have to say.
All right. Thank you for calling. Okay. So, Mike, do you have what is the status of initiative and referendum? Isn't it no longer allowed for land use issues? Okay.
Sandy Beach case. Essentially, a referendum on a zoning issue is not allowed, and that is something that the Supreme Court has, the state Supreme Court has said, is reserved for a legislative activity. And so, even though we have referendum issues that pertain to powers of county government, to actually go in on a specific parcel and designate a specific, to have it done, have a specific zoning or type of zoning action designated for a specific parcel through referendum, that cannot be allowed.
All right. And so since vacation rentaling is a zoning issue, that's something that cannot be dealt with through the referendum process, too. Is that correct?
I would not. I guess that's a good question, Joan, because it's an issue of general law, potentially. But at the same time, There are weaknesses, given the Sandy Beach case, that if something by referendum were to be proposed for TVR, that the county could have difficulty trying to enforce that particular, passage of a charter change, if landowners were to contest based on the Sandy Beach case. So it requires some analysis. I can't give you a yes or no answer on that, but certainly, issues of more general, public policy in terms of how the government operates and those types of things can be, addressed through referendum.
Okay. So I know when I first did the first blog about the property at Wainiha where the man drowned. Then you did conduct an investigation into that, and I understand that's still underway, so it can't be discussed. But then I was asked if the planning department was going to investigate the other ones that I've pinpointed, and I was told from the mayor's representative that the planning department operates on a complaint basis, and so to get enforcement that you like in writing with the address, the purported violation, the applicable zoning violation. And so I'm just thinking, isn't that kind of a big burden on the public to, one, even know what the zoning violation might be? And if you guys see something that's wrong or if you hear about something that's wrong, don't you just jump on it instead of waiting until you get a formal complaint?
You know, it's a good question, Joan. And you know, when you look at what land use laws are in the county, as well as what resources I have here at the planning department to actually enforce them, the reason why we generally emphasize complaint based as a mechanism to enforce the law is, one, it's not what we would characterize as being like a selective enforcement. We receive complaints and we address them. And then the second thing, too, is that what we do is rely on essentially people being good neighbors. And, you know, if there is something that is maybe not necessarily, you know, correct about a home, but it doesn't necessarily bother somebody next door, sure, they can come in and say, okay, this is incorrect, this is a violation. But at the same time, you know, we rely on just people being good neighbors. And if people aren't being good neighbors, that's when really we come in and say, you know, okay, you guys got to cut this out. So it's not to say that it's right, but, you know, a lot of what planning's laws are meant to do is to try to, you know, plan for the future, provide a guide map for growth, provide restrictions and development in other areas, and then also to, you know, just ensure that there is a good feel for the community in terms of usage and the way the community looks. And unfortunately, when we look at it from a resource standpoint, why we try to adhere to the complaint-based system, and this is something, you know, I've had to adjust myself thinking to. And when I first came into the department, I thought, hey, we're gangbusters. I'm going to send inspectors out every day, and we're going to pound. But you know, in reality, it takes a lot of effort from a civil side, because we do not have injunctive powers to actually go through and stop a use. It's not a criticism of the system, because I think it's actually a beauty of the system that you educate as part of the enforcement, and then what you do is you say, okay, please come into compliance. Whereas when you look at it from a criminal standpoint, it's injunctive, and you want to have something done immediately. And I think the public has been very clear, and I understand that areas like Wainia, areas like Haena, there are some things that need to be addressed immediately. And unfortunately, the way that the wheels work in my department, these things take a lot of time. These things need a lot of attention. And from a resource standpoint, I either may not have the qualified staff to do it, or the resource time is taken up with commission matters or other matters that are more pressing. So it's good that, you know, that we have Justin willing to talk with us and understand what our issues are and what our situation is and how we can try to, you know, partner resources together to try to, I guess, create more of a synergy in enforcement, because the standard alone method, you know, is really something that we need to move away from. And we need to, again, have our systems talk to each other, look at ways that we can try to collaborate and try to address this problem more efficiently.
All right. And again, we're speaking with Mike DeHeelig, the planning director. We're talking about vacation rentals. And once you begin investigating a complaint, and then it's my understanding that it remains confidential until there is some sort of action taken, and then that can be public. And so isn't there a way that the public can be involved in deciding what sort of action is taken against this property owner, or are they just sort of at the mercy of whatever planning decides?
I guess the way that I would say is that when we go through, let's say, a contested case hearing let's say I cite somebody, right?
Mm-hmm.
And let's say they appeal it to the Planning Commission. The public has the opportunity to come in at that at that hearing to voice, you know, support for the blind department's recommendation to, let's say, enforce on these guys. Or vice versa, let's say that we do get to a contested case hearing on a matter, but the planning department's recommendations aren't stiff enough. The public can come in and talk about those too. So, you know, when it comes to, whenever we look at trying to modify or revoke approvals, it is a public process because of federal property rights guaranteed under the Constitution, and we have to have some kind of due process. And our state law is very clear that due process proceeding is a public process. So that's how, you know, the public can be aware of what's going on when we start these actions, because, you know, I hear what you're saying in, with respect to how can the public help out. And I think the other thing, too, is going back to, you know, the earlier question, that if there are, you know, things that need to be checked out, you know, a lot of times we have to rely on the eyes and the ears of the public to kind of tell us and help us out. And so that's where those complaints come in, and part of why we catalog the complaint again is part of our defense in saying that, you know, we're not being selective in what we enforce. What we're doing is we're taking complaints as they come in and we're investigating them.
All right, so we have another caller, Mike, and we'll go ahead and take that. And okay, so okay, Mike, are you there? Okay, we're having a little bit of trouble here with the phones. And so, just to recap, we're speaking with Mike DeHelig, County Prosecutor Dustin Kohler.
Hello, how's it?
Okay, all right. So, do you have a question?
I have a point.
All right.
Now, my question is, first of all, born and raised on Kauai, or how long you been here?
Are you asking me? Well, wait, first, haven't you called in about 3 times already today?
That's my 3rd time, probably.
Okay, yeah. So can we just let other people maybe have a chance?
I know, but I'm really opinionated, though.
I understand that, but, you know, there are other people who have opinions
okay,
and thoughts,
good,
too.
Good.
All right, so you can call back again a little later, okay? Thank you.
Okay, I will.
All right.
God bless you.
God bless
Bye.
You, too.
Honesty and transparency, that's a beautiful thing.
Yes, it is. All right, so let's see. Do we have Mike back on the line?
Hello?
Okay, Mike, great. You're there. Okay.
Yeah.
So,
I'm sorry, I missed the last question, so I wasn't
that's
sure.
That's okay. It was. It really wasn't a question. So the question I have for you, and I know you have to get off about 5 o'clock, is it seemed to me that when the council passed these ordinances that there was the sense that there was supposed to be some attrition to reduce the numbers of vacation rentals. And so how is that going to happen, or can that happen?
Well, under state law, and again, we live in a dual jurisdiction zoning system. And so anything that is under Chapter 205, we have to follow with respect to how we apply our own zoning law. And when you look at Chapter 205, what is very clear is they use this phrase amortization, and that is not allowed in the residential and in agricultural districts. But the way that we approach and try to keep on top of these homeowners or these vacation rental owners is that they need to be in strict compliance with our county code. And if they are not in strict compliance with the county code, then what we do is we say, no, you can't renew. So far, we've issued, I think, about 20 or so odd from this last renewal batch, that, you know, what we want to do is tell them, look, you didn't come in on time, and because you didn't come in on time, we're rejecting your renewal. Other things are, okay, you're missing a certificate. You don't have the certificate. Sorry, you can't renew. And so there are things that we are trying to do to be very, very organized, and that's why, you know, in the beginning of our conversation, we have to really have, you know, organized and very accurate systems so that when we have something like this pop up, that we have, okay, you know, they missed the deadline, you're done. They missed something else, you're done. And that's what we think is our effort at this time to try to reduce the number of transient vacation rentals, not because we're trying to push them out, but because they are not complying with the law. And when they're not complying with the law, they should lose their rights. And that's pretty much what my position is on with my staff in terms of how we catalog and what comes in, and we say, hey, you know, you're not following the process. That's your fault, and that's it.
Okay. And so you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. And so, Mike, there's just one last question for you, and then
Sure.
I'll let you go. Thank you so much for staying on. Okay?
Pleasure. No problem.
Okay. So, caller. Okay. So we're going to get the next caller on here.
Hello.
Okay, caller.
Hello.
Are you there?
Yes. Hello.
Hello. Okay.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I just happened to be turning the station, and I heard this thing about vacation rental. Born and raised here, a family born and raised, and long story short is we missed the bus on getting the our house for vacation rental. But you know, it's and I know that you know it's cut and dry, you know. But there's, you know, it's going to be blind to the fact that there's a lot of everybody jumping on the bandwagon, and, you know, the newbies come in and just changing the whole trip, the trip down Hanalei. And I don't know if you've been there lately, but the construction's bad, but still get, like, choke traffic. It's even beyond that, it's quality of life. And you know, we gotta sit down and really, just get some tough decisions. I don't know if we're willing for, you know, face up to them, but wow. No, we don't need more roads or wider roads. I know I'm getting off tangent, but enough cars already. But anyway, quite a difficult task, but I was wondering if no more cars can make for the guys come on us. It's for Mr. Boat, because, you know, because sorry, because you're local. I know that sounds stupid, but
so your question basically is, so there were people who are Kama'aina who have lived here forever.
Yeah.
And they
didn't
get in on the vacation rental. So, Mike, is there any way for some of those people to get in now? Okay, wait, we got to get Mike back in here. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, Mike.
Yeah, can you hear me all right?
Yeah, did you hear that, Mike?
Yes, I did. I heard
okay.
The question.
All right.
So vacation rentals, transient vacation rentals, and specifically single-family ones, are allowed within visitor destination areas as designated by the zoning code. And so these are areas that are just like lines that are drawn on a map, and they're on our zoning map so people can come in and take a look at them at our counter. And if you are able to get a house within those dashed areas, you can actually come in and, you know, you essentially can put up a single-family transient vacation rental. If you're outside that boundary, you can't. So that's the law. And where the in-between is our renewals handle those that were outside the boundary, but the law was changed in 2008.
Okay. So some people, you know, they didn't fudge their information, or they didn't get in there, so they're just kind of out. So that's just it. All right. So, Mike, I wanted to say thank you very much for calling in and taking the time today. That was Mike DeHelig, our county planning director. And are there any last comments that you would like to make?
No, Joan, I appreciate you giving me the time to talk story with you. And certainly it is an issue that I want to be clear that our department is focusing on. And we're constantly trying to adjust, and we can do better. And we're trying our best to make the adjustments and really try to essentially achieve what the legislation was intended for, which is to keep vacation rentals outside of residential areas that are meant for peace and tranquility. And that's what we're striving to do. And hopefully, as we try to make adjustments in our systems and adjustments in the way that we enforce, that we'll really be able to start snowballing our efforts in achieving that purpose.
All right. Okay. Well, good luck in that, Mike. And hopefully you can get some assistance here from Justin, too, on some of the enforcement side. And we'll see how it goes.
Thanks, okay. Mike.
Okay. See you later, Justin.
Okay. Yep. Great. Thank you for calling.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Okay. Bye-bye.
The last caller made a really important point, I think, and because it crystallizes what planning is supposed to be all about, and why we have a zoning code, and you know what it means to have a visitor destination area. Because you know, I wasn't born and raised here on Kauai, so I don't pretend to speak for people who were or understand what it means to everyone who was. But, you know, planning means that when you've got roads that can carry a certain number of cars, you make sure that, you know, you're putting uses in that area that don't overburden those roads. So that's one reason why you don't put these rentals outside the VDA, because it brings a lot of traffic to the area. It's a fundamental planning question. So it's not just a question of, well, this person bought this house, why can't they do whatever they want with it? And why is the government trying to stop this person from making money? It's just... because when you violate those principles of what planning is supposed to be about, you lead to a chaotic and less pleasant community to live in. And I think that, you know, it falls on our shoulders, and I know Mike is doing what he can, but he and I occupy positions of trust in our community, and it really falls on us to try to honor those principles of sound management, you know, and sound planning and sound enforcement. So it really does crystallize what planning is about and what enforcement is supposed to be about. So I think the last caller brought up a really important issue.
Indeed. Okay, so we have another caller. And go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to, I guess, I think I'm probably going to be in the role of devil's advocate here. I'm intimately acquainted with the whole issue of vacation rentals, as I live in an area in which is almost 100% vacation rentals. And what I find in all the discussion and the legislation and everything is it's kind of skewed the way much of KKCR's political opinion is, all to one side. Oh, we've got to get rid of these vacation rentals because they're doing X, Y, or Z. And after having observed them for, 10 years or so, what I think is that basically it's just a function of change, and it was Internet that changed things. So suddenly visitors who did not want to be in zones called VDA zones, you might want to call them hotel concentration camp zones if you were negative about it, desired a different experience, and they were able to get it via the Internet. Now suddenly there's all these complaints because people don't like the change. Specifically, for example, the gentleman just mentioned traffic. Well, I personally find that there's more traffic from the local residents in my neighborhood than there is from the vacation rentals, who generally have one car. It's generally a new rental car. It's generally quiet. Whereas local people who live here might have two or three or four or five cars going up and down the road all the time. So what I find in this whole discussion is that when you start with a false premise, which is, in my opinion, that all these vacation rentals are a bad thing and that they should be somehow policed, enforced, limited, this, and this, you often end up with a false conclusion when you start with a false premise. Now,
all right, caller, I think Justin Kohler, our county prosecutor, would like to respond to some of the comments that you've made.
Yeah, and I do want to thank the caller for calling in and raising that question. As far as starting from a false premise goes, I think, you know, when we came in here at 4, one of the first things I said was, I'm not interested in closing down every vacation rental on the island, and I'm not interested in putting people in jail for running vacation rentals, and I'm not anti-vacation rental. But what I am in favor of is following the law, and I'm in favor of people not dying because they're in an illegal apartment in a flood zone. So, you know, to me, to invoke, Nazi concentration camp imagery is a little bit disingenuous. So,
it was a little over the top, I will admit.
Well, but it shows that when you want to slant something in a particular direction, you can do so. So, you know, what I want to be clear about is that I'm not coming at this from a perspective of, you know, OMG, I hate vacation rentals, but I want people to follow the law, and I want people to not die because other people aren't following the law, and innocent people fall into the path of a tsunami or a flood or what have you. So, you know, whether it's traffic coming from a local person or traffic coming from a visitor these uses do intensify. You know, when you take a house that was a two-bedroom house and all of a sudden you turn it into a 10-bedroom house, you don't have to be a traffic engineer to figure out you're going to be bringing more cars into the area. So that's why we ask people, just follow the law. And if the law says you can do this here, just do it. And if it says you can't do it, well, you can change the law, or you can go do your rental somewhere else. So to me, it's not as dramatic a question as you know, you phrasing it. So.
Well, I appreciate your response, but I also think that your example of someone turning a two-bedroom house into a 10-bedroom house is also a bit disingenuous.
Well,
you may know of an instance where that's happened.
Actually, that has happened, and let me just talk about that for a minute, which is some of the concerns, particularly on the North Shore, because you've had places that started out as a one-bedroom or two-bedroom house that have been expanded, sometimes illegally without the benefit of the proper permits, and now they're sleeping 12 to 14. So you've had something that previously housed one or two people, oftentimes permanent long-time residents, that are now housing 12 to 14, 8 to 10 to 12 to 14 people. So it's
what happens right in Hanama'alu every day. Come on. I used to work as a social worker for KEO. I've been in houses in Hanama'alu where there are 20 or 30 people living in one house. So there's really no difference.
There is some difference because people in Hanama'alu, I think, are on the septic system, where up there in the North Shore, they are on cesspools, many of them, because they have not upgraded to septic. And also because Hanama'alu is close to services and emergency functions, where some of those people up in Haena and Wainiha have no access to those. And so they're a little bit more isolated, and there are visitors who are not familiar with how to, you know, help themselves if there is a tsunami alert or something like that. So,
well, I certainly agree with the prosecutor that following the law should be the first order, and so why don't we do that in both instances where there's too many people living in a home in a residential district in, for example, Hanama'alu, or, for example, when people are running other types of businesses out of their homes, which are illegal, such as child care centers, attorneys who work at home, beauty shops, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What my issue is that there's all this focus on vacation rentals as if there's some inherent evil in having a vacation rental, when in fact there's other violations that go on every day, including right here in my neighborhood, that are never enforced and haven't been enforced in spite of numerous complaints to numerous agencies. And I won't belabor the point anymore. I think you kind of have got the gist of what I think about it. But I would end with that I recently visited Cuba. And to my great amazement and surprise, homestays and vacation rentals are now encouraged by the government of Cuba so that their people who live there can enjoy the fruits and benefits of the hard currency that comes into the country from the many travelers who wish to come there.
And I think we haven't typically modeled our society after Cuba, so I'm going to have to...
No, we haven't, though. In fact, it's more free than our society in that respect. But the point being that the same benefit accrues to the people who run vacation rentals and all of the people who service them, including housekeepers, yard gardeners, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So my only issue is that all of the focus seems to be skewed toward anti-vacation rentals, bad thing, when other things that in my view are equally bad or worse, for example, our horrible traffic situation,
Perhaps you'd like to get involved and get active on dealing with some of those things, like the rest of us who are concerned about vacation rentals are trying to deal with that issue. So
I am involved.
Okay, good.
It really requires the government limiting the amount of cars, just like they're limiting the amount of vacation rentals.
All right.
Easy solution.
Okay.
Thanks very much for hearing me out.
Thank you, caller. Okay.
Yeah, and I think that last point is a really good point. And I think a really good way to do that is to encourage in areas like Hanalei and Wainiha is to encourage use of single-family residences by single local families who maybe live and work in the communities that they're inhabiting, so that they're not there's not 12 visitors taking 6 vehicles from Hanalei to Koke'e every day, clogging up traffic in Kapa'a. but rather maybe you've got one family with a provider or two providers who are going to work in Hanalei from Hanalei. I think that it's all connected, and, you know, again, we're talking about planning, and I'm only an amateur planner, but, it's all tied together, so it's an important point.
Okay, so I need to thank our underwriters here and remind you that you're listening to KKCAR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea.
Neil Norman and the Hawaii Life Brokerage Ohana proudly supports GMO-free Kauai, agricultural, biodiversity, and sustainable farming practices, such as community gardens, food forests, seed saving, and beekeeping. Malama Aina, Hawaii Lifestyle.
This year, more than 1 billion people around the globe will participate in Earth Day 2013 on April 22nd. People of all nationalities and backgrounds will voice their appreciation for the planet and demand its protection. Ho'oʻuluwehi, the Sustainable Living Institute of Kauai at KCC and ASUH, are sponsoring an Earth Day celebration on Monday, April 22nd, 2013, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at KCC. This celebration will include sustainability and health education, cultural demonstrations and performances, musical entertainment, art contests, and food and craft. More information online at ho'oʻuluwehi.blogspot.com.
And thank you very much, underwriters, for making this show possible. This is Joan Conroe, your host today on Out of the Box. I'm here in the studio with County Prosecutor Justin Kohler, and the topic is vacation rentals. If you have a question or a comment, the number is 826-7771, and we're just going to take a little small musical break here for a moment. And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. I'm Joan Conroe. I'm here in the studio with Justin Kohler, our county prosecutor, and we're talking about vacation rentals. If you have a question or a comment, you can call us at 826-7771. And we've been talking about some of the problems with vacation rentals that got their certificates without being properly permitted. And
there's a question.
Okay, we have a question here.
That was what is the difference between a bed and breakfast and a TVR?
So the question is, what is the difference between a bed and breakfast and a TVR?
That's a question that probably would be better for the planning director, but from my limited way of answering that would be to say that the zoning code contains pretty specific definitions for what is a TVR, for what is a homestay, and really differentiates between those uses in some detail. So, could I tell you what is the exact difference? No. But I could say that, you know, the zoning code does set out with pretty specific guidance as to what constitutes a TVR, what is a homestay, and, you know, bed and breakfast and those different things. So that would be something to look at our comprehensive zoning code for guidance on.
Yeah, so probably if you have a specific question like that, you should just call the planning department, and I'm sure they could clarify it. So we do have two callers here, so let's go ahead and caller. You're on the air.
Hello, is this me?
It's you.
Hi. You know, I once lived in a vacation rental down there at Hyena that was very nice, and I wasn't worried about my life. Because even if I was living in a regular old home, if a big 100-foot tsunami came, we'd all be wiped out, you know. But at any rate, you know, part of the problem was just the expense of renting a place anywhere on Hawaii, whether it's legal or not legal. I mean, my rent, which is $700 a month, takes up 80% of my budget, which is just outrageous. And I don't know if that's a problem for any of your other listeners. You know, the high price of living is absurd, right, just for renting, unless you're a millionaire and you own your own place, and then you're stuck with taxes and all that stuff. But anyway, just, you know, for the attorney Kohler, you know, bless your heart, you mentioned a little while ago that you were in a position of responsibility, of authority, honesty, and you know, towards the public, and you know, I just want to remind you that I'm just an ordinary old Joe, but But I have those same responsibilities, too, to be kind to my neighbor and be thoughtful and considerate and obey the laws as best I can, you know, like, you know, and be a good person, you know, trying to do the right thing. But anyways, I'm bound to authority, too, you know. Thanks a lot and have a nice day.
All right, and thank you for calling.
Yeah, thanks for the call. You know, that is a responsibility that each one of us has, is to be those things you mentioned, and thanks for the reminder.
All right, and so we have another caller. Go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Well, thank you very much, Justin Caller. I'm glad we have somebody fresh doing these things. And, yeah, it's really frustrating being on Kauai. And, you know, my family's from here and also live on different islands. And it's just locals, you know, they don't understand that, you know, vacation rental stuff. We're here to live. This is where we live. You know, I mean, a lot of newcomers come here and then all of a sudden they just want to be pro Kauai. And it's like, it's really frustrating when you get people that have a lot of money and it's in your face, and then they just do vacation rental and then they flip houses and sell them for millions and then drive the prices up. I mean, I just remember the simple life of, you know, be good to your neighbor like that last man said and things like that. And I'm just not into this system of gain. It just seems like it just drives the prices up, and it makes our, you know, I have children that are adults, and it makes it difficult for them to live at home. And they have to move off island. And it's like it really sucks when you have newcomers thinking that they're from here. And, you know, I have to justify that. The world's getting crowded. You know, I know it's terrible on the mainland. And people want to live in paradise. I don't blame them. But to drive the prices up and to make it uncomfortable. I heard the other guy talk about how people have two cars. Sure, people have jobs. You know, a lot of us have 2 to 3 jobs work to pay just for a mortgage or a rent. And there's local people that do that. Yeah, we need to have separation. We need to have our own cars. Too bad, we're going to work. But, you know, it's like, I'm just really frustrated that, you know, it's come down to this. This is not why we live in the Hawaiian Islands. You know, we live here for peace. We're not here to cater just to the tourists. I mean, it's unfortunate that it's turned out that way, but I'm thankful I got to enjoy Kauai with the way it used to be. And that it's like, now you drive to Haena and it's like, gosh, you can't even find parking space, you know, and, you know, some people try to create parking space and then they say that's against the law, and it's like, you know, it's a lot safer having it on somebody's property, whether they're breaking the law or not, than have it your car broken in just because you went hiking to Hanakapiai or something like that. I just, you know, it's just really ridiculous on some of the things that are occurring. But hopefully what I'm saying is, you know, I'm sure a lot of people feel that way.
But, yes, they do.
I appreciate all the changes, you know, especially with Justin Caller in the office and so forth. But that's all I wanted to say. It's great to have this radio station to call and express ourselves, because, you know, the local people and people that live here for a long time are very frustrated at this time. You know, it's just, there's so many empty houses that people own and nobody lives in. It's just, and then there's people living on the streets. It's really frustrating to see that as human beings.
It is. It's okay. Very disturbing. Well, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts.
Mahalo.
Mahalo.
Aloha.
Yeah, thanks for that call.
And I just want to follow up on that caller when he said thank you so much for KCR and remind people that our fund drive is coming up here soon. And so please be prepared to help us stay on the air. And so we do have another caller. And oh, and a question. So we'll do it with the caller first. So go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Hi, yeah. That's interesting that guy got on before me, because I just had something similar to say to the one guy who said he lived by a bunch of vacation rentals and, you know, it was all wonderful for him and, you know, less cars and all that. Because the problem that I see, not that I'm completely against vacation rentals, however, the problem is, well, one, I believe that if you have a vacation rental, I mean, I don't know if this can happen, that you should live on island or live in it. I don't think people should be allowed to have them that don't live here. I mean, that's like, I know when we went through vacation rental stuff, years ago, I don't even know how many years anymore, that's like there's some people like up in the Kilauea area that have vacation rentals, but they also have a large piece of property and they live there. And they supplement their income by having other little units on their land. And I don't see a problem in that. They live here. They're taking care of it. They know that they have good people renting, et cetera. And they're Hawaii residents. When you have these rich people who come in and have a vacation rental solely for the purpose of making more money, I don't agree with that. And on top of that, my main concern is that I've seen over the years and years and years and years is that less and less housing that is affordable or even close to affordable for local people.
That's a very good point.
And like he said, you know, there's all these people that can't afford. I am a teacher. Every single year, at the minimum, I have one child who is houseless, up to three or four every single year, that is sleeping on the beach or part of KEO or trying to do this or that. And that should not be happening. It is ridiculous when we have all these empty places on this island. And that is why I do not believe in vacation rentals at all, because it's made all the prices go up, so all the rent keeps going up, and everything keeps going up. And pretty soon, it's going to be almost all visitors and no local people here at all.
Well, I
and
think
that's all I have to say.
Well, thank you so much for calling.
Yeah, I think that's a good summarization of I think some of the secondary and tertiary effects of the abuse of these, you know, properties, is that you do see a depletion of available housing stock for people that live and work in the community, which, you know, lowers the quality of life for everyone. And you also, you know, like you said, with owners who don't live here, you see the money then leaving the community. At least, like you said, if the folks live here, maybe, you know, some of that money stays on island and goes to support other things, if only local merchants and what have you. So I think that, you know, these are all good reasons to kind of bring the enforcement picture back into balance here in our community. And, you know, the only way to do that is if we've got a full enforcement picture, which is going to be the civil component that the planning department or the administration enforces, as well as the criminal component that my office would go out and enforce. And like the planning director said when he was on here, it's going to take some collaboration. It's going to take working together. And you know, his department has the investigators. My department has the attorneys. You know, if we don't work together, we're not going to get anything done. And the county council, they're the ones that write the legislation. So we've got to work together with them, too. And I think if, you know, we've got the best chance we've had in a really long time to have all three of those arms of government kind of working together. You know, historically, there's always kind of, you know, there's been infighting, there's been kind of tensions or, you know, just things not flowing smoothly. But I think at this point in time, we've got the best chance we've had in my memory, which is, you know, admittedly short. But we've got, you know, everybody, I think, ready to pull in the same direction. So it's important for us to capitalize on that.
Well, that's what I'm hoping, too. So we're here speaking with Justin Coller, our county prosecutor, and the topic is vacation rental and enforcement of some of the violations. So we do have some other callers. So go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
I'm right here.
Okay.
I can't believe what a bunch of BS. Either do it right or you do it wrong. And you know what? You can blow smoke up everybody else's ass. Don't blow it up mine. Okay. Don't blow up the rest of Kauai.
Okay, caller. Thank you for sharing your opinion. Okay. All right. That man does have a regular opinion. So I think there was a good point that was made by the last caller and other people, which is the fact that having some of these vacation rentals has definitely increased the cost of housing and the scarcity of housing, particularly on the North Shore, because there were a number of very small, affordable rentals that people had lived in long term that were then converted. And so it's very difficult for people to find a place to live on the North Shore, particularly and something they can afford. So we have some other callers. And so go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
I've been listening to you folks, hearing all this. From the time I was little, when I lived on the other side of the Hanalei Bridge, in Wainia, in Hyena, everybody had to come to this side of the bridge to get a job, to get some, to go to work, to put food on the table, and a roof over your head. Nothing's changed since I was little. And my father and my uncles laid all the water line pipes on Kauai, on the sacred grounds of Kauai, and dynamited the sacred grounds so they could lay the water line pipes, so everybody can have a toilet to flush and a shower to rinse off, all the way to the end of the road. And people should be thankful that they got a roof over their head and food on the table. And stop whining and stop protesting. It ain't worth it. Move forward.
Okay.
That's all I got to say.
All right, well, that's a good point. We all should be grateful. There are a lot of things to be grateful for.
That's the truth.
Okay, thank you for calling. All right, we have another caller. And go ahead, caller, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'd like to know that now that we have all these vacation rentals, they're a legitimate business. They're required by law to recycle all their products, as in every other business. And if so, what's being done to enforce that? And if not, I think that's wrong. I see a lot of these people, they don't care. They vacation rental, they party, they just take it out to the curb and throw it all away because they don't need that money. They just want to clean up. And is there any laws about that? You can answer that question. And vacation rentals on ag land, how the hell did that happen? How did that happen? I don't know. How did that get through these people with the slick lawyers and grandfathered in this and that? It's ag land. They're not growing a darn thing. Those homes on Kaupea in particular, in Kilauea, people know where I'm talking about. How the hell is that? This is ag land. Why did these people get to do 5,000 a night vacation rentals? It's crazy.
I agree with you 100% on that.
How are they supposed to be monitoring that they are recycling legally? Even though, I don't know if there's any way to go back in time and revoke things that are on ag land, if that can be undone. There's people waving their new permits around and $5,000 a night, and they don't even care. I like that point about the other one. Yeah, they should live here to make that happen for them and make all this money. That's all I got to say. Thanks for KKCR. I love it for people being able to.
Okay, and thank you for calling.
Yeah, thanks for the call.
Okay, so Justin, are you able to answer that question about is recycling required for? You know, it is for businesses, at least cardboard, I believe.
Yeah, and I'm not aware of any mandatory provisions for that would apply to transient vacation rentals. At least not anything that would have any kind of criminal component to it. I don't even know if the county would have the infrastructure to support that kind of thing in terms of, you know, the curbside pickup and other things that we should be doing and should be moving towards doing and allegedly are moving towards doing. So, you know, our department has adopted zero waste principles, I can tell you that. But as of now, that's a purely voluntary thing.
And I know that trash is a concern because one person who lives up there in Wainiha was saying that a lot of these places have 6-8 trash cans that are filled every week because, you know, you have a lot of people in a house and they're buying a lot of packaged stuff and it creates a lot of waste. And so it's another way that these vacation rentals impact the community, whereas I think a lot of the resorts are more into recycling, but when it's out here. And after we take this next
Absolutely.
Call, we can talk address his issue about the ag TVR. So go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Is that me?
That's you.
Okay. I first came on the island in 72, and, of course, the whole North Shore at that time was all local people. And now, I mean, you know, you're hard-pressed to find a local face in Hanalei Town. It looks like California somewhere. But my question is, you know, I mean, we're all fed up with the traffic. And a whole bunch of this, I think, can be placed on these vacation rentals. I don't understand why the hotels aren't all over this. They should be upset. Unless they have 100% occupancy, the legal people who are renting. I mean, I can see the car rental agencies and stuff. They don't care. They want to get as many vehicles or whatever on the highway as they can. And even the food stores and ever. Oh, the more the merrier. But why aren't the hotels mad? I mean, you know, they're losing business.
That's a good point, and I've often wondered that myself because we know they are not at 100% occupancy.
And is there anything on record of them coming in to, I mean, Justin's only been in there a little while, or, but has the planning department fielded any complaints about this from, you know, from the movers and the shakers, not just the regular people who are mad about the traffic and what's happened on the North Shore?
Justin?
You know, I don't really know the answer to that question, and all I can say is that it seems to me like it may be a case of out of sight, out of mind for a lot of things. If you go into the visitor destination areas, you see the hotels. They're very visible. But if, you know, you really have to go out into Haena or Wainiha and look around, and, you know, they make them very difficult to see on purpose in many cases. So, you know, I think a lot of people aren't aware of the scope of the problem, and you know, it's got to be something that's on the visitor industry's radar screen, but then again, the visitor industry is more than just the hotels. So,
Of course, visitor industry just wants more people here.
Right, right. So I don't know if that has an effect on one sector of the visitor industry not wanting to speak out against another sector of the visitor industry. That's kind of a political thing that is beyond my scope of understanding, but it's a great question.
I mean, this is a little tangential, but is there any way to limit the number of rental cars on the island or limit the capacity of this island to take care of people? I'm just sick about this whole, you know, overpopulation of illegally.
I'm sure there are ways to do that, and I think that would take a legislative solution, and I think that would take amendments to the CZO, and it'd take some work, I think, and not being a planning specialist, I can't say what the mechanism of that would be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, I'm more of a criminal guy, but so that is, you know, again, I don't have the exact answer to that question, but it's certainly a problem because, you know, if you try to rent a car on this or any of the other neighbor islands, it can be real difficult sometimes. So those agencies are maxing out, and they're
sure.
Bringing in as much as many vehicles as they can, and it's kind of scary when you get on the road, you know, head north through Kapaa or even south through Kapaa, you know, any time on a weekend day, and you're in a stream of nothing but rental cars. So
well, even just getting access onto the main highway is problematic these days. But I want to thank you for taking this on, and Joan for highlighting this issue. This is very important, and I appreciate your work in this area.
Well, thank you very much for calling. All righty, and so we have another caller. And go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Yeah, I'd like to underscore that caller's admiration for Joan Conroll and Justin Coller, for both of you.
I was thinking,
what did we do to deserve Joan Conroll and Felicia Sutton, you know? God, what did we do right?
Well, you just live on Kauai, where we all try to care about our community.
I'm so thrilled. Listen, one caller or several callers have alluded to what is going on that was wrong. The state of Hawaii passed a law in 1972 to protect our prime agricultural soils, and ever since, there's been a lot of abuse. And all I've heard so far is the abuse of the people who have actually put the buildings on the land. But I haven't heard anybody say, what about the corruption within the county government? And so my question to you, Justin Coller, is, have you got the cojones to go after the corruption within the county government?
If we find evidence of people committing crimes, we prosecute those crimes. You know, to me, you know, I've been here a short period of time. I'm a newcomer to county government. I'm not beholden to anybody. And, you know, I get asked this question a lot, especially when this issue comes up. And, you know, to me, you know, we don't go out looking for trouble, but if we find trouble, we deal with it the way that our office is supposed to deal with it. So that's again, one of the luxuries of having been elected and, you know, being accountable directly to the people rather than being accountable to, you know, anyone else or any one person or any board of people. So it's we do have that kind of freedom. So to me, it's not an issue of cojones or not having cojones. It's just an issue of doing your job.
Okay. Well, I'll just give you a heads up. Papers are about to be filed by the attorneys, and you're going to have your hands full.
All right. Thanks for the heads up.
you. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you for calling. And again, we're talking here with Justin Coller, the county prosecutor, about vacation rentals. And I want to remind everybody that Moe's is in the house and Acoustic Luau is coming up at 6 o'clock. And it's always a great, easy listening show. And I wanted to get back to one comment that another caller had about how did vacation rentals get onto ag land. And that is a very good question, because it has always been my understanding that state law prohibited vacation rentals because you have to have a farm dwelling in order to develop on an ag land parcel. And so how these people were then able to translate that into a vacation rental, all I can say is it was a lot of pressure from private attorneys, from people who had a lot of money on those ag lands who wanted to do these very, very lucrative vacation rentals. And some of those are actually not, some of them are permitted and some of them are not. And so I'm hoping that both the planning department and the prosecutor's office go after some of those that are not, because some of those places are raking in a pile of dough. And that's what drives up the cost of ag land for real farmers. So we do have a caller, and go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. I'd like to thank you for having this discussion here.
Thank you.
I'd like to say that the abuse chronicles that Joan Conrad produced for the County of Kauai on his TVRs was outstanding. It identified the fraud and the abuse that is going on. I think as a leader, Mr. Caller, you have a great responsibility to rein in on what is happening here. What is actually going on is that white-collar crimes. I mean, the problem is identified. And if these TVR is supposed to be registered, I mean, they should actually be treated like the sexual predators, where they have to actually be held accountable, and there has to be, like, the laws. They have to follow the laws, and if they're violated, then there's be some kind of punishment. And what's been occurring throughout these years is there's no recourse for violating the laws. So what are you going to do exactly to enforce these laws? And if there are multiple abuses by these TVR companies or sole providers, are you going to shut them down? Because obviously they're not willing to follow the laws that govern them.
Well, that's why we want to go out and do some enforcement. You know, we do see the need for it, and Joan and others, because, you know, there have been a number of people working on this issue, you know, going back for years at this point, who have been looking to bring attention to this. You know, we've got our jurisdiction to enforce criminal violations within the county, and there are categories of offenses that involve TVRs that have gone unenforced up until this point. And like I said earlier, this isn't going to be a thing where we're magically gonna get our position filled tomorrow, and next week you're going to see some headlines and, you know, people getting hauled off to jail. That's not a realistic expectation. These things are going to take time to develop. They're going to take investigation. They're going to take, you know, careful use of resources and careful assembly of the cases before you get ready to proceed on them. But it's a process that we, you know, it's overdue. It needs to start, and it's something that, you know, we do have kind of the stars in our favor right now to really make something happen. You know, provided we can work, which it looks like we can, with the administration and with the council to kind of get everyone, you know, like I said earlier, pulling in the same direction. So thanks for the call.
Yeah, I'd like to thank you, and I'd like to say that there needs to be a precedent set. And once it's set, I mean, there's a bar that everyone needs to uphold, and if it's uphold, then, you know, a business can operate legally.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you, caller. Appreciate your call. All right, so we have a few calls stacked up here, and we're kind of running out of time, so go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
I'm right here right now.
Okay.
My simple point is this, brother. I will never vote for you next time because you seem to be one of those folks.
Okay, caller, please. You have had more than your fair share of time, so I'm just going to go ahead and make a unilateral decision here to cut you off. We have a couple other callers that would like to talk, so go ahead, caller. You're on the air. This is you. Go ahead. Okay, you're kind of cutting out a little bit, so if you're on a cell phone, could you go someplace stable so we can hear you? Hello? Okay, let's... We have another caller. Okay, go ahead, caller. You're on the air. Go ahead. Caller.
This is easy.
Okay, yes. All right, so we only have about five more minutes that we can take calls, 826-7771. And again, we're speaking here with Justin Caller, our county prosecutor, who is going to be seeking some funding for for a deputy prosecutor to do some of this enforcement. Is that correct, Justin?
That is correct. We'll be presenting our budget to the county council tomorrow morning.
Okay, and so we don't do calls to action here, but if anybody thinks it's a good idea for him to get a little extra support to do some of this vacation rental enforcement, then you can contact the county council. You can contact them by email or call. And if you check quieteclectic.blogspot.com, or you can just even Google my name, Joan Conrow, C-O-N-R-O-W, then you'll find a link to how to contact the council on there. And you can also find out more about these abuse chronicles that have been written. So we have a couple callers. And so go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Hello, John. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, you and Justin, for bringing up this topic. It's a really, really important one. My thoughts about it are, in order to become the status of vacation rental, you have to get signed some permits. And so those folks that signed those permits began it all. You know, I mean, in order to do that, you got to be an official to sign those slips. So we have to look farther than just the owner of the house, because you know, the county officials here, I believe, and I've been here for 32 years, 53. I think that the county officials here, I don't know if it's the planning department or what specific department it is, but to have $10 million houses, like that other caller said, on agricultural land, someone agreed to it. Someone signed a slip that said, yeah, go ahead and build, you know? We shouldn't have those people in office because they're not in our best interest. They're ruining it for the folks. They're ruining it for the grandmas and grandpas, the local folks that were born and raised here, that once those people build those houses next door to their cute little funky house that they've had for 80 years, their land taxes go up. At least, at the very least, the officials that signed those permits should grandfather in a clause to those folks that, you know what, you get to have $124 a year taxes. But no, instead what happens is they get so stressed out, they think they can't afford to live here anymore, and they move to places like Las Vegas. So we need to look to our county officials to see where it all began in order to find out what's happening now.
Well, I think Thanks. That's a good point. And thank you for calling, because it's, you know, we have landowners, that's one issue, and then we have county officials, that's another. And so I think it's a big picture that has to be looked at in terms of implementation of the law, efficiency and competency of county workers, possibility of corruption or whatever. So it's just stuff that needs to be dug into.
Yeah, it's a big one, and it's a lot of work. And you know, I love doing volunteer work sometimes, so maybe I'll give you a call and help look into some of the housing stuff.
Okay, thank you for
calling. Get involved, yeah, fantastic.
All right, so we have another caller here, and go ahead, caller, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I was just saying that I believe about the people building houses and then not renting it out, but the people that do rent it out, it brings income on this island, yeah? And it keeps the money flowing.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think they should do anything with that, but just the people that build their houses and then they leave and no one's in it.
Mm-hmm. So just places that are left vacant, but you don't have a problem with people renting them out as a vacation rental?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I know the island's busy, but brings in income, keeps the money flowing.
Mm-hmm.
And people need to realize that.
Mm-hmm. That's true. It does.
I'm a local person myself, born and raised here.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for calling. And I think, as both Justin and I have said, it's not to try to get rid of every vacation rental, but just to make sure that people are complying with the law. Okay, so we have another caller, and go ahead, caller, you're on the air.
Hey, Donna, Joan Conroe.
Okay, yes, go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi, Joan, I was just wondering, if you don't file a complaint with the planning department, then they won't investigate, is that correct?
That's correct. They enforce on a complaint basis.
So we must go out there and actively search for these that don't have TDR permits on ag land or wherever they may be and file complaints with the planning department. That's correct, yeah?
Yes, that'd be the best way to try to get some enforcement action going on them.
Good to know. Thank you so much, Joan.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Okay, so we have... Okay, I guess that's it on the callers. All right. So we're getting, I think we're wrapping up here at the end of our show. And so, Justin, are there any comments that you'd like to make here in closing?
I just want to thank you for asking me to come up here again and also for Faith for helping out here in the studio. It's always a pleasure for me to come up here and be on the station. I think this is my fourth or fifth time up here, and each time I enjoy it a little bit more. Because we do get a good cross-section of people calling in. I don't think it's a really, you know, monolithic voice like the one caller mentioned. I think you do get a good cross-section of viewpoints here, and you know, I certainly welcome that. And even the hard questions, you know, it's a fulfilling experience for me to come up here and take those questions. So thank you for giving me the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Okay, and so we're going to go ahead and see if I can get this last CD to play here before we sign our way out. And then next coming up will be Moe's. And thank you very much for tuning in to Out of the Box. This is Joan Conroe. Aloha.